Hello, my name is Pieter Vermeulen and I'll be sharing with you about cross-cultural communication in this session. I've been working in South Asia and in Africa among unreached people groups for the last 20 years, and I'll just share some of my experiences with you, what I've learned about cross-cultural communication and how to plant churches among different people groups. The easiest story to explain to you how cross-cultural communication takes place is if you look at a cat and a dog, and the way they communicate totally differs and send out different messengers. When a dog comes to a cat, he wiggles his tail because he's very happy, and when a dog is angry, he lifts his tail to show aggression. And the cat is exactly the opposite. When a cat is aggressive, he wiggles his tail, and when he wants to play, he lifts his tail. Now, the cat and the dogs comes together, they cannot speak, and they communicate by using their tails. So the cat interprets the dog as being happy, but instead, when the dog looks at the cat is happy, but the way he communicates is he lifts his tail, and the dog interprets that the cat is angry, and immediately the dog lifts his tail and the cat thinks, but the dog is happy, and then miscommunication takes place and the two of them start fighting. Now, that is just a simple explanation of how the message we want to bring to the people is interpreted totally differently. And that I have experienced through the years, how we try to communicate, because through our worldview and our value system, we interpret certain things and we try to convey certain messages, and the people that is in the response of the message don't usually interpret it exactly as we are, as we meant it to be. One of the tribes I work and that changed my perception was a small tribe on an island. And to reach this tribe, you have to travel more or less for 3 or 4 days. First, you have to try to fly to a different continent, and then you have to fly to a close by island, and then you travel by bus for 8 or 9 hours, and then at night you travel with a dugout tree, and eventually you reach this tribe. Now, this tribe was very, very hostile up to 2003. First friendly contact with them was only made in 1997. Now, I was on the second trip. The first trip that went to try to reach this tribe with the gospel is my friend went with his brother and two of his friends, and of the 5 people that went, 3 of them got shot by this tribe, and the people were extremely hostile and they didn't perceive outsiders as friendly. They are a hostile tribe, and just to reach them was a challenge. You can look at the first picture there. There is Ubu. He was the guy that shot my friend's brother. And this people is nomadic. They travel and roam around from the island. They carry the help, all the positions they carry on them. And they travel from water point to water point. And they travel together as a tribe. And what I learned from them was very interesting. The first thing is they have a very, very high respect for one another. They really take up responsibility and they're very, very loyal to one another. And even though they were hostile, they had very, very good virtues and very good values. The second picture, you can see them hunting. Now, what is interesting of this tribe, they haven't discovered fire up to a few years ago. They traveled and as they found food, they ate the food. The main diet was fish and wild honey. And when we came to them, it was quite difficult, first of all, to make communication with them or to make contact with them, because we didn't understand their language, they didn't understand our language, and we used different kinds of means to show that we tried to be friendly with them. The next picture, you can see a small little hut. That is the house where I used to stay. The people don't wear clothes. They sleep on the floor, and in the monsoon time, which is the rainy season, they build small houses covered with different leaves, just to make sure you don't get too wet. There you can see, the next picture, you can see the woman, every woman going out to catch fish. What is very interesting of this tribe is every morning the whole tribe gathers together and then they go into different directions. The women go fishing for fish in the rivers. The men go hunting either for wild boar or for fish. And whoever gets the first food sings a specific song that I found enough food for the tribe for the day. And they all come together and they share their meal. Now the challenge to communicate with them was they didn't have a word for God. They were an animistic tribe, and just to explain to them that there's a God in heaven who loves and cares for them was extremely difficult. And you can just imagine bringing the gospel to the people who have no kind of worldview than we have. I mean, they still live on an island all these years, they believe the world is flat, and even at night when the sun goes down, all the unmarried boys go stand on their heads in front of the sea as the sun goes down, and they believe unless we do this ritual, the sun will not rise the next morning. So we had a wonderful time staying with these people, and it took many years for us to start to understand them. Now, when you reach people, you must always ask, where do you start? Now, we have a Christian background, and most of us have some kind of understanding of the Bible. But the Bible starts with the creation, that the world was perfectly created. And they understand that. They understand that the world is perfect and we live from the world, but they also understand that something is wrong in this world. And the moment we explained how God initially wanted the world to be, that everything was good, there was harmony between God and man lived peacefully, they even had traditions in their own history about that, which was very, very interesting. Something that was very interesting about this tribe is when the tsunami hit them, none of them got harmed, even though that the wave hit their island. The wave literally went over their island. And when I returned to them and I asked them, but why didn't the tsunami harm you? They told us that in their tradition, they have some kind of knowledge that was transferred from their forefathers to them, that one day when there will be a big earthquake, they must all go and climb the trees because after the earthquake, a big wave will come and hit the island. So deep in their culture, they have some richness and some oral tradition that explained to them and which they transfer from one generation to another generation. So eventually, after we explained the gospel to them about the creation and that something is wrong with this world, they understood it because they are in hostility against the next tribe and they couldn't understand, but why? Why we are still staying on different islands? Why are we shooting one another? Why are different people coming there and why is there hostility? And then we could start explain to them, but this is not how God originally intended man to live. God intended man to live peacefully. So whenever you go to a different nation, try to understand what is the concept of God. How did God and they live in harmony if there was a story like that? And what went wrong? And then from the beginning, you can explain to them. And we've got a very, very simple model which we used, and eventually after about 8 or 9 years living with these people, they finally came to the understanding of the knowledge of salvation. And that is what communication is all about. Communication is trying to live among the people, trying to understand how do they perceive things instead of enforcing our Western or our concept of how we perceive things to be upon them. I mean, they still live on these islands. Up to this day, they still do not wear clothes. They still roam around, hunt around. But change have taken place. Instead of being a hostile, small nation living on an island, the hostility stopped. The mortality rate was very high. A lot of women died giving birth. Both the woman and the baby died. They told us, before we used to come, whenever they go hunting, sometimes crocodiles used to catch them. They would die of fever. And since we came and we brought the news to them, the crocodiles don't attack them anymore. The women don't die giving birth, and they don't get the fever anymore, and whenever they pray, they get healed. So supernaturally, the Spirit of God have been working in their lives, and amazing change have taken place. And that is what the gospel is all about. In 2008, Nepal had its first election, and from then things changed, for it was much easier to enter the country. Now, it's very interesting how we got there. We tried to communicate, and I've tried to look on Google Earth on the maps, but not much information was available how to reach the city. So I asked one of our local guys, please find out how do you reach the city so that we can prepare ourselves. So he sent me an email. He said, no, it's about 6 hours drive and about 2 days walk. So we packed our bags and we drove. We've got a vehicle and we drove. 6 hours came and went by. And eventually the road ended. At the last village before we really went into the deep mountains, I just stopped and I asked, now, where is this city? And the guy, he just shook his head and he said, you will not reach it. It's about 2 more days driving and about 150 kilometers of walking. So we were desperate to go there. So we drove right through the Himalayas with our vehicle, and at the end of the road where the vehicle couldn't go anymore, we start walking. And you first start in a tropical forest, then you go through the mountains, the Himalayas, which is some of the most challenging 4x4 routes. And eventually you entered into this desert, and we had to walk about 40 kilometers a day until we reached the city. You can see in the picture there the woman traveling. The road is very, very difficult, but it was a very, very interesting experience for us to visit the city. After days of traveling and visit all the little towns over which the king was ruling, we finally reached the city of Lomontang. And there you can see in the city, it's a very ancient city, the main street of the city, two women there carrying some baskets. The city still live off trade, where you trade different things. You trade food for, you trade rice for salt, or you trade clothes for this. So they're not very open to outsiders. But the Lord really, really opened the door. And in the next session, I will talk to you about the whole story of a gatekeeper and how God uses people to open doors. Now, one of the reasons why we do missions, and why one of the reasons why there's still so many unreached nations, is because it's difficult to reach them. I mean, just to reach the city of Lomontang take about 10 days of walking to reach them. So it is extremely difficult, and not many people have the capacity to walk through the Himalayas to the city. Now, once you reach the city, another challenge is, how do you communicate with the people? Because they've been in isolation for many years. Not many of the people in the city speak another language or even English. So to communicate with them is extremely difficult. And to present the gospel to them takes time. And that is one of the big challenges which I really want you to think about. How effective is it if we go to a city like this just for once? Will we be able to communicate? What is our long-term goal? And that is one of the big challenges of our generation, is to be involved in a specific area for a long term. Because change takes place over time. These people have been so used to doing their things and their traditions and their values and their history, and they're not really open to outsiders because they see change as a threat. One of the big challenges in South Asia, as Hany have explained, is they see Christianity as a Western religion. And I've stayed in India for many years, and even if you travel in India, it is very interesting to see. If you just look at the buildings where the Hindu stays, where the houses they stay, the temples they use, and then in some of the cities you see Western churches, I mean, built like the colonial British people used to build them. Big buildings with towers, and it's totally, it's like a pain in your eyes when you look at these buildings. You can clearly see it doesn't belong here. It is something from the outside which was enforced upon these people. And our biggest challenge is to bring the gospel to the people in a way they can understand. And we will talk about that when we come to church planting. So the challenge which you must really think about is when you go on an outreach, on a short-term outreach, what will be the long-term impact? Paul speaks to the people of, in Acts, he speaks to the Philippians and said, I have not failed to bring you the whole counsel of God. And it's something you must really think about. What is the whole counsel of God Paul is speaking about? He was speaking to a Roman people living in a heathenistic society. I mean, they didn't have Jewish values. They had their own idols. They had temples where they used to worship with temple prostitutes and a total evil society. And he came to them and said, I have not failed to bring you the whole counsel of God. And the whole counsel of God is the Bible. The Bible starts from creation and it ends with the second coming of Christ. So just to bring the message of salvation to people takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. And when we go to the culture, our first responsibility is try to understand the people. The story which I want to end up is the story of the Naga Nation. And there you can see the first picture is of this tribal leader with the heads of a different tribe. Now, the people are no longer headhunters, but they used to be headhunters. And the last big headhunt took place in 2004. This was a nation living in northeast India, and they were fierce warriors. Every year they would attack the neighboring tribe, and the men would use the heads of the enemy as a trophy. And sometimes they would put their heads in the fields to keep away evil. And the man with the most heads would be regarded as a warrior. Now the Nagas had a very ancient tradition that they were close to God. And they really made God angry, and God took away the word, his word he took away from them in a written form. And even though they didn't have their own language, they believed that long time ago, they had that. And somehow, one day, somebody will come and he will bring them the word of God. And this was this deep in their tradition, was this rich inheritance which they longed for. And when the missionaries came to India, nobody would want to go to the Naga people because they were headhunters and they were feared. And every year they would do this tradition of killing one another. But even with this killing of one another, they had specific rules. They may not kill a woman, you may not kill a child, and if a person is not armed, you may not attack him. So they even had rules, and they would fiercely punish even their own people who would disobey the rules of war. Now, when the first missionary came there, you can imagine yourself, you can see the picture there of the men warriors. Going to people like that, how would you think you would feel moving into a village where people is known to be headhunters? And the first thing they asked this British missionary, did you bring God's word to us? He didn't know what to say. He didn't know what to expect. And this was this people came to ask him. So God have been working among them even before the first missionary came. And this whole nation converted to Christianity within a few years. Most of them are believers today. So to work among people is very exciting. We learn a lot about ourselves. We learn a lot about people. And by staying with people and being faithful, we see transformation taking place. And this is where we will end this session. In the next session, we will start by looking at the book of John. Thank you.